Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky spoke at the opening of the Munich Security Conference in Germany.
He pointed out once again that Ukraine will fight until all territories are liberated and all people are coming back from captivity.
Plus, the WHO presents its health assessment of the war's impact on Ukrainians nearly a year into the conflict.
The devastating war in Ukraine is taking a heavy toll on the mental health condition of millions of people.
And later in the program, updates on Russian and Ukrainian refugees who fled the violence. Today is Friday, February 17th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin visited Estonia on Thursday, where the United States and NATO allies have increased force numbers as part of a push to deepen defenses across NATO's eastern flank. Estonia held its annual winter camp exercises this month about 170 kilometers from its border with Russia, bringing together many capabilities that Ukrainian forces are eager to add to their arsenals. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb was there and starts us off.
Estonians defend trenches that French forces try to seize. This is how Estonia prepares for war. But because they're a member of NATO, they wouldn't go it alone. And NATO allies are fully integrated into the exercise. British troops clear the way for Danish Leopard 2 tanks to punch through simulated defenses. Tanks similar to the ones soon to be seen on the Ukrainian battlefield. NATO allies hope the Leopards, along with Britain's Challenger 2 tanks, will give Ukrainians more power and protection than the Soviet-made tanks currently in the fight.
The battles in the Ukraine will be slow, and what you need a heavy tank, like Challenger, that can take a hit, and more so than a T-72, which will probably be destroyed after one round. Challenger can take multiple hits and stay in the fight.
But training Ukrainians to use these tanks effectively won't happen overnight.
Tanks are much weighted, we know that, and I really hope that we are just not too late for that. Russians still have, even they have lost more than 2,000 tanks, they still have thousands of tanks in the stocks they can bring to Ukraine. They still have missiles, they still have rockets, which means that, of course, Ukraine needs as much help as we can give.
Estonia's defense minister tells VOA his country has spent 1% of its entire GDP supporting Ukraine, and nearly 3% of GDP on self-defense.
We have a clear understanding that every tank destroyed in Ukraine is one tank less behind our border.
How worried are you that Russia could attack here?
Well, we have to be ready. Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, we are like the front door of NATO. And when the front door is locked, then it's safe to be inside of the house. So simple is that.
A message NATO allies have taken to heart as increased defenses pour in. Carla Babb, VOA News, Tapa, Estonia.
The United States Vice President Kamala Harris landed in Munich on Thursday to attend the 59th Munich Security Conference that kicked off today. The conference is an annual meeting with experts, high-ranking politicians, and various heads of state discussing global security policies. The main topic of this year's conference will be the ongoing Russian invasion of Ukraine, which has sparked a change in security policies all over Europe, including commitments to increase weapon deliveries in the last month. For the first time ever this year, the organizers have not extended invitations to representatives from either Russia or Iran. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky addressed the conference via video link, and VOA's Lori London spoke with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv to get the details.
President Zelensky had his opening speech. The main message that he shared with the audience is that Ukraine is already a part of Europe and Ukraine is protecting Europe because the weapon which is shooting in Ukraine is actually pointed on Europe. He also said that Ukraine is working very hard to join the European Union and that Ukraine is getting ready to start the negotiations about the joining of the Union. He pointed out once again that Ukraine will fight until all territories are liberated and all people are coming back from captivity, or those bodies of Ukrainian fallen soldiers who Ukraine also is, you know, wants to come to return. He of course again pointed out that it would not be an option for Ukraine to give up the land, to give up the territories, because in this case Ukraine and the whole world cannot be sure that Russia would not start another war sometime soon, either in Ukraine or maybe in other neighboring countries.
We're hearing that Russia is planning a full-scale invasion on the one-year anniversary. Is that what you're hearing on the ground? And what are Ukrainians doing to prepare?
Well, there are a lot of risks regarding possible Russian new assault planned by Russian Federation. And of course, there are a lot of talks about this. For the moment, Ukrainian military do not report that they do not see the concentration, enough concentration of Russian forces in the regions which are bordering Ukraine, such as in the north, for instance. So if we're talking about the danger for another battle for Kyiv or another assault on Kyiv, for the moment, Ukrainian military do not confirm this. And but again, everyone is on the alert. And I personally visited some points at the border, and I can say that Ukrainian border and soldiers at the Ukrainian border are quite prepared for possible new assault. In addition, what President Zelensky has already confirmed, that this new assault by Russia has already started in the east, and this big assault and massive assault that everyone were talking about is already happening in the east. So we're talking here about the Donetsk region and partly the Luhansk region. But of course, the main hotspot is currently around the city of Bakhmut. And we're also hearing that Russia's main aim for this point of time is to take control over the whole territory of Donetsk region. But we still should understand that it's still a long way to go for Russian forces, because they are shelling these areas very badly, but they are not, for the moment, they are not able to reach the city of Bakhmut.
Anna Chernikova reports for VOA from Kyiv, Ukraine, and she was speaking to VOA's Lori London. Russia's current focus is on the small city of Bakhmut in the Donetsk, as Anna just mentioned, one of two regions that make up the Donbas. In battles led by the Wagner group, swelled by prison recruits, Russia has been for months pounding and encircling that city. Most of its pre-war population of about 70,000 people have left, leaving Ukrainian soldiers dug in. Ukrainians in Chasiv Yar, a town some 10 kilometers from Bakhmut in the eastern portion of the country, are enduring near-constant shelling as violent battles between Russian and Ukrainian forces rage near the town. Anna Rice narrates this story from Yaroslava Movchan.
Locals in Chasiv Yar near Bakhmut see shelling every day. It is one of Ukraine's most dangerous areas.
My name is Roman, and I currently live in the basement. The conditions are tough. The whole city has been damaged. There's non-stop shelling in the morning and in the evening. It's quiet for a few hours, and then it starts again. So we stay safe here.
Roman Bartko's family is one of six, many with children, living in this basement after their homes were rendered unlivable. Despite the constant threat to his family's safety, they decided to stay.
We discussed it a lot. My wife is head of the Apartment Building Co-Owners Association. She is responsible for people's homes. Some still live there, and she does what she can to help. So for now, we're here.
And while the situation is tough for adults, Bartko says children have the hardest time.
Деткам хочется на улицу побегать, погулять.
Kids want to go outside, to run, to go for a walk. It's difficult to explain to them. It's dangerous because shelling can start any time. We have 30-40 minutes window in the morning, though, when we take them out to get some air.
Serhii Chaus, the head of the local military administration, says bombs fall in densely populated areas.
No one can explain why they do it. There are no military objects here, just apartment buildings and a playground. You see? Over there.
Schools and hospitals also get shelled, Chaus says. This kindergarten was shelled twice in late January. The town is living through a humanitarian crisis. Grocery stores are closed, as are pharmacies. There's only one doctor left in the town who continues to see patients.
There was a store here. It got hit, and the owner couldn't open the door. One bomb hit the church. At least three stores closed. We'll be leaving. There is no other way.
Лилия Кравченко has a small stall at a local market. But after yet another shelling barrage, she decided it was time to leave. Bakhmut, a focal point of the war, is just a 20-minute drive away. The supply route for Ukrainian soldiers fighting in the city runs through Chasiv Yar, something that worries local residents who fear Russian forces will attempt to seize their town. For Yaroslava Mavchan in Chasiv Yar, Ukraine, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko said on Thursday that he would only order his troops to fight alongside ally Russia if another country launches an attack against Belarus. From Reuters News, Flora Bradley-Watson has that story.
President Alexander Lukashenko made the comments on Thursday during an impromptu press conference in Minsk. He also accused the United States of not wanting peace in Ukraine and of pressuring European countries, who he says do. Lukashenko said his country did not want to fight, but was prepared to, if provoked.
We are peaceful people. We know what war is. We do not want war. There is no way we are planning to send our troops into Ukraine unless you show aggression to Belarus from there. That's all. That's my reply, given a long time ago, and I still stand by it. We will give you no such chance. But should you dare to set a foot on our soil, the response will be terrifying. The Westerners know which response it will be and which weapons would be used. A terrifying response.
Lukashenko, who is one of Russian President Vladimir Putin's closest allies, said Moscow had never asked Minsk to go to war in Ukraine. Belarus did, however, allow the Kremlin to launch last year's failed offensive on the Ukrainian capital Kyiv from their country. Recent joint Air Force drills between Russia and Belarus have raised fears that Minsk could be preparing to take a more active role in the conflict. Lukashenko called on Biden to meet with Putin in Belarus and end the war.
Reuters, Flora Bradley-Watson. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. World Health Organization Regional Director for Europe, Hans Klug, has appealed for more funds to support Ukraine's health sector, which has been severely damaged by the Russian invasion. Earlier, I caught up with Lisa Schlein in Geneva over WhatsApp to get the details.
Yeah, well, the major ask what I got out of his press conference, which was pretty interesting and chilling at the same time, was that the devastating war in Ukraine is taking a heavy toll on the mental health condition of millions of people. In fact, he said that nearly 10 million people may currently have a mental health condition. And he said that it's absolutely essential that means to deal with this really awful situation be scaled up and scaled up rapidly. And I just want to mention one interesting thing. He, by the way, is on his fifth visit within the past year, and he's pretty pessimistic about the situation right there. But he mentioned that he met with the First Lady Olena Zelenska yesterday, and she said that everyone in society has to become a psychologist, which kind of pinpointed the seriousness of the situation, I would say. But just one other thing I wanted to mention is that they have three major priorities and challenges going ahead in terms of healthcare. And they are mental health, as I just mentioned, rehabilitation, and the last one is access to community services.
Now, Lisa, of course, they can't conduct these and implement these much needed programs without money. So what was the financial ask that Director Klug made?
The World Health Organization is appealing for $240 million, and this gets split between the people who are internally displaced inside Ukraine and those who have fled the country and gone to neighboring countries as refugees. And the way they plan to deal with it is to use $160 million of the appeal inside Ukraine and $80 million for the refugees. And the reason for that is that, as it was explained by him and also by the WHO representative in Ukraine, the refugees, although they are living a very difficult life in the European countries, do have more access to health facilities than the people in Ukraine, where the bombs are raging down upon them. And there have been so many health facilities which have been destroyed, well over 780, or around 780, so that access to health facilities and treatment is really very difficult. So they need that extra money.
Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, Switzerland. Lisa, thank you very much for your time this Friday.
You're welcome.
In the first weeks of Russia's war in Ukraine, refugees who fled to neighboring countries were offered free travel across Europe. A year on, the only remaining free transport is a train from Poland to Germany, which is paid for by the German state and operated mainly by volunteers. As Henry Ridgewell reports, places on the train are in high demand.
The night train to Germany. Every 2 days, the service leaves Przemyśl on the Ukraine border for Hanover. It is reserved solely for refugees, but getting a place on board isn't easy. Inside Przemyśl station, a waiting room has become a shelter reserved for mothers and young children. They are the first to receive the wristbands that guarantee them a place on the train. Red Cross volunteers oversee the process. They are frequently offered bribes, but there is a strict waiting list. Alexander Hrabarchuk and his family fled the city of Severodonetsk on the front line in eastern Ukraine. After 2 days waiting in a shelter, the family has their wristbands and is preparing for life in Germany. 70% of the city has been destroyed, Hrabarchuk told VOA. It will take at least 3 or 4 years to rebuild. Of course, I want to go back. I grew up there. It was very hard to leave. We did it for the sake of the children. Each compartment on the train can sleep 6 people, or up to 8 if there are young children. Sébastien Bertin, a volunteer with the Red Cross who travelled to Przemyśl from his home in France, told VOA, "We only have 4 railroad cars on the train, so we have 210 people with the wristbands who will join the train to Hanover. We wish that we could have 5 or 6 cars. We have an enormous need for these extra railroad cars to be able to accommodate all the refugees." The process is slow and methodical. Volunteers use every available space for the refugees and their luggage. There are many more refugees desperate to reach Germany than there are places on the train. Some are able to buy their own rail, bus, or flight tickets to Western Europe and beyond. But many refugees have lost everything and rely on this free service. For many, it is a long wait in the freezing winter night. Olga is from Zaitseva, a village outside Bakhmut in eastern Ukraine, scene of some of the most intense fighting. She said the houses were completely demolished. There is no place to go. They destroyed the village in the middle of the night. I don't know where I can start again. Now I can't buy a house. I can't build a house. I don't know how I can live. I don't know what hope God can give us. For now, the only hope is to escape from the war, to put faith in the charity of strangers. After a two-hour operation, 230 refugees have been squeezed on board, 20 more than planned. And so, at 10:30 p.m, the train pulls out of Przemyśl for the 16-hour journey to Hanover. Another step on the long road to a new life in an unfamiliar land. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Przemyśl on the Poland-Ukraine border.
And finally, on the first day of Russia's February 2022 invasion of Ukraine, Nikolai Kyriv sat down with his three-year-old son and cried as he read the news. Now he's one of an estimated 112,000 Russians living in nearby Georgia. He has started up his own business, but many in Georgia eye him and other Russian immigrants with suspicion. Reuters' Matthew LaRotonda rounds us out.
This is the beautiful old town of Tbilisi, Georgia, nestled in Eastern Europe's hills, and the capital of a country that is now home to many of the Russian citizens who fled Russia because of the Ukraine war. But while Georgia is overwhelmingly pro-Ukraine, and a year has passed since the invasion began, the Russians still here aren't necessarily welcome by some residents, even if they may share the same anti-war values. Gleb Kuznetsov is originally from St. Petersburg and has now opened a handicrafts shop in Tbilisi.
Once, I don't know if you need to hear this, we had the whole of our door plastered with stickers with banners saying, "Russians, go f*** yourselves," in the shape of the Ukrainian trident. We also had an attack on Google Maps with negative reviews. There were about 10 of them. We have tried to find a Georgian-speaking assistant here for this shop or a bar attendant for that bar, but unfortunately, we haven't been able to find anybody. We advertised the vacancies in Georgian youth groups on Facebook and didn't get a single reply.
As Kuznetsov says, the language barrier may be contributing. Many use English as a common language, and classes like this teach Russians Georgian. But there's much more to it than that. Georgia has a long and hostile history with Russia. In the 90s, separatists in two areas of Georgia were backed by Russia, and they expelled the ethnic Georgians living in those regions. Then there was the brief war between the two countries in 2008. Georgia was also a former Soviet country. Opposition political parties in Georgia have called for limits on the number of Russian arrivals. On the streets of Tbilisi, students we spoke to gave mixed views on it. For example, this man said he can't share a drink with Russians and thinks it's awful that they're opening businesses here. The Russians aren't friends, he says. They're enemies. This woman says she wouldn't go into a Russian business. Although this person says he would, that he recognizes not all Russians are bad. Nikolai Kyriv was in Russia when the invasion began. He says he sat and cried as he watched the news with his three-year-old son.
That evening I decided, and it was very obvious, that we have to leave the country as soon as possible.
Now he owns a bookshop aimed at Russian exiles. He even has shelves for dissident authors, some of whose books are banned in Russia. He's hoping to transition from Russian language books to English and become what he called an international space.
That's Matthew LaRotonda of Reuters News. And that's going to do it for us this week. Be sure to stay up with the latest developments, not only in Ukraine, but on news and events from around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day at our website, voanews.com, as well as on our social media feeds. Just be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America, Washington, D.C.